Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now celebrating 5 years of burning up the airwaves.
If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
You're listening to the voice of small business.
This is Dr. Fraser Crane. I'm listening.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for hanging around with me this morning. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. I'm excited about our guest this half hour. Steve Forbes is a friend of ours, a member of our Brain Trust. He's editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine. He's CEO of Forbes, and as I said, he's our good friend. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Jim. How are you?
Doing great. It's good to have you back on the show with us, and it's always a pleasure. Steve, let's get right into the news. I noticed on Forbes.com today that founder and former head of WorldCom, Bernie Ebers, had been charged in Oklahoma for let me just read what it says here off of Forbes.com. The Oklahoma Attorney General on Wednesday filed charges against WorldCom as well as its ex-chief executive, Bernie Ebers, and along with a number of other companies. Apparently, he's been charged with violating state securities laws by giving false information to investors. That's in Oklahoma. As you know, Bernie has become one of the poster children for contemporary corporate corruption. And I guess my question to you is, I'm sure this kind of activity, and of course, now he's still innocent until proven guilty. Let's get that out on the table. But investors probably like to see this kind of activity. And does this help return confidence to the marketplace?
I think people do want to see wrongdoers brought to the bar of justice. But I think that what returns confidence to the marketplace is the feeling that the economy is finally turning, that companies are starting to invest again, create jobs again, make profits again. That's what's going to turn this thing around. And one of the paradoxes of investing is that sometimes confidence follows the market. It doesn't lead the market.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, the market has gone up this year in double digits. The NASDAQ has been very impressive, but people still remember the huge losses they took. So they have a saying that in a bull market, prices climb the wall of worry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of worry out there. But I think the thing, barring some disaster overseas or another blow-up, big corporate blow-up here, I think this thing is finally beginning to turn. I think this sort of three-year walking pneumonia that we've had is finally coming to an end.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, you know, part of the problem with what's been going on in the stock market has been not just the results of corporate corruption, because, you know, I did the math on the companies that we know about that have been charged with corruption, and if you compare that to the total number of publicly traded companies, it was 0.8% of all publicly held companies that were known to have done something corrupt. So that was really small. Of course, the mania of the 90s created a lot of the economic bloodshed, didn't it, Steve?
It did. We had a period where everyone came to the conclusion that high tech was the basis of the future, and when people get the same idea at the same time, you do get overinvestment, and we've had a very, very painful shakeout. But that doesn't mean, of course, that the technology itself was bad.
Mm-hmm.
The technology continues to move forward, continues to give us real big gains in productivity. It's just that not everyone makes money on it. You look at the history of the mainframe computer, big, big advance after World War II. But IBM maybe made money at it, but no one else did.
Right. Well, the thing is that what I think what investors have to realize is that there's enough blame for the way things are right now. If your 401k is now a 201k, there's enough blame to go around. We can actually look to ourselves a little bit. Because, you know, everybody got a little bit of a taste of the excitement back in the 90s, and the truth is, it was a period of time when when people thought the laws of economics had been suspended, and the truth is we found out that that wasn't true.
You're right. There's no provision in the U.S. Constitution that says the market had to go up 25% a year. And it was a nice giddy feeling every time you looked at your portfolio to find out that it grew. Remember a story of a fellow who finally persuaded his mother to take her money out of a checking account. He was earning no money. Put it in a, you know, open up a mutual fund account that invests the money. He said, you know, this is the way you got to do it, Mom. And you can write checks on it as well. And she said, a few months later, she told her son, she said, this is the best invention I've ever seen. I write checks and the balance goes up.
Well, you know what? You know what the definition of euphoria is, don't you, Steve?
What's that?
A false sense of well-being.
Right,
so
right.
If you feel euphoric, folks, you might want to check your position. 22, we're going to be right back with our good friend Steve Forbes. Stay with us.
I'm just beginning to see.
We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the hour straight ahead, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, will be with us. We'll be talking about some of the things that they have to say about what's going on in the world. Steve Forbes is our guest, and as you know, he's editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine and CEO of Forbes. And Steve, Forbes.com has got a lot of good stuff up today. I was noticing some of the things. I just got the Bernie Ebers report off of that, and that's an interesting thing that's happened in the publishing industry, isn't it? The addition of the online component, and that's really been good and bad in some ways for publishing companies, hasn't it, the online component?
It has. We see it as a complement to what we do with the magazine. We think one feeds the other, and certainly the growth of use of our website has confirmed that. And actually, a lot of websites, including ours, have had a very good year this year. They're starting to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what the web has been superb for is instant news. Instead of getting up in the morning and popping at the paper, you go on the website and quickly see what's going on, what you need to know.
We've all noticed that we read the paper differently today than we did 5 years ago, don't we?
That's very true. And you also use the web during the day, not like the paper where you might read it in the morning and then coming home from work, take a look at it again.
Mm-hmm.
At the website, depending on what you do for a living, you can be using it right during the day.
Is the Internet going to transform 21st century society the way electricity transformed 20th century society?
I think so. There was a lot of that speculation in the late 90s. But even though we've had the bubble burst, so to speak, I think that the technology itself is having a profound impact. You see it the way people communicate now. You combine that with cell phones, especially now that you can start to tap messages in and perhaps even do pictures. As these things become more powerful, it is changing the way. I was at a ball game last night, and you know, people would call people in another part of the stadium, call people at home during between innings. I mean, this is big stuff.
We don't call people. We don't call places anymore. We call people, don't we?
That's right.
Yeah.
And
the
distance doesn't mean quite what it was. Eventually, in this country, we'll get our act together on broadband and on cell phones, so that you can, you know, go from one end of the house to the other without losing your call.
Right. Well, and I'm looking forward to being able to be online all the time in my car as I go down the road.
That's right. And so it gives you flexibility. Downside is, if you want to get lost, it's going to be harder to do so.
That's right. Steve, let's change the subject to something that I know is something you focus on quite a bit, and that's healthcare, the healthcare industry and the situation that we've got right now. As you know, healthcare expense has gone up, healthcare insurance, I should say, has gone up in double digits, 3 and now, I guess, 4 years running, something like, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13% on average over the last 3 to 4 years. That's just killing small business owners. What are we going to do about what can anybody do about this to make it where small business owners, people who have 4 or 5 employees, can afford to offer health care for themselves as well as their employees?
Well, there are a couple of things that have to be done. One is to make it easier for small businesses or all businesses to go along something what they call medical savings accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And what this does is allow you to offer a health plan where you offer your people money up front for medical expenses. Then they have a deductible, and then you have the regular insurance. What's killing health insurance today is that it's all third party. The consumer's not in control. There's no reward for a consumer to be careful on health care dollars, because it's you know, all you want to do is get through your deductible to cover your expenses. And what we've done at Forbes, and what a growing number of companies are doing, is have a plan where you give people money up front. They don't use it, they get to turn it over for next.
I think we, did we lose him, Kyle? Okay, we'll get, sorry folks, that's the beauty of technology. Sometimes it doesn't work. Kyle, we'll get him back on the line. The thing that's happening, folks, with healthcare, with the MSAs that Steve was talking about, the medical savings accounts, the problem is that it's actually kind of an experiment right now. It's not even readily available all over the country. And what happens with the medical savings accounts is that you actually have an insurance policy and an investment component in that policy. And if you don't use...
Hello?
You're there, Steve?
Yeah, we got cut off. Sorry.
That's all right. No problem. I was just pointing out, Steve, while you were off, that the medical savings accounts have been really sort of a stepchild experiment more than a full-fledged a product that's available. And what we've got to do is get this into the mainstream, proliferate it around the country, and show people the benefits. But as of right now, it's really kind of a best-kept secret, isn't it?
It really is. And part of the reason is all the restrictions that Congress put on it when they created these things several years ago. Those have to be removed.
Thanks to Ted Kennedy.
Yeah, thanks to Ted Kennedy. And what companies are starting to do now, thanks to an IRS ruling, is offer what they call health reimbursement arrangements, which are like medical savings accounts. Your broker can tell you about it, your insurance broker. The only problem is that the employee doesn't own the policy. But if Congress would just make these MSAs, medical savings accounts, easy, would make them affordable, the consumer would be in charge, the employer wouldn't be hoisted every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they got to go.
Well, and it'd be a great benefit for small employers to be able to offer to their employees, and it would be something that would help strengthen the backbone of our economy, small businesses.
It sure would, because right now, as you point out, this thing has been a disaster.
Yep.
Because no one's in charge of it, and
mm-hmm.
so things just keep spiraling out of control, and more people go without insurance.
Stand by, Steve. We've got to take a quick break, folks. It's 10 till. We'll be right back with our good friend, Steve Forbes. Stay with us, please. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Steve Forbes is our guest. Steve, on at Forbes.com, can my audience subscribe to your magazine on the website there?
They can indeed. I think I have some good offers on the site. You just go to Forbes.com, www.forbes.com, and there's a lot on the site, a lot of areas you can go, fresh material each day. And we have over 4 million unique visitors each month. And so I think our site and others that are in the information business, I think this is the way to go. And you can... They're two different mediums, but I don't think, as we talked earlier, I don't think there's any big conflict between the printed page and the electronic medium.
I certainly don't think so either. The challenge has been for companies like yours just to make the transition. That's where, and I'm not saying that it was a challenge for you guys, but for the industry, it's been a challenge just to make the transition. Not only technically and structurally, but culturally.
That's right. And one thing I think that publishers learned is that you just don't throw the printed page on a website and say, we've got a website.
Right.
It's a different medium. It's like 100 years ago when movies came, some people thought, well, you just film a stage play and you have a feature film. No,
mm-hmm.
it's very different.
Right, absolutely. Steve, I want to, and by the way, folks, Steve, do you have a subscriber phone number handy? Do you have that handy? Do you know it?
I don't have it in
okay.
front of me,
but go
on
to
the
Forbes.
Website, it's right there.
Right, go to Forbes.com, folks, and check it out. The website, as he said, is dynamite, let alone...
Actually, what you can do is call 212-620-2200, 2200, and one of the choices is on information for subscription.
Okay, all right, that sounds good. Steve, let's talk about globalization a little bit. You know, globalization is manifesting itself in a number of ways in the marketplace today. Many people are protesting against it like it's some kind of a political policy that can be debated when, in fact, in my opinion, globalization is merely an old-fashioned capitalism being delivered in a faster, high-tech truck. Would you agree with that?
Yes, and in effect, Jim, we've had globalization since we started coming out of caves and starting to communicate with one another, try to trade with one another. And this is simply part of the process, doing more things around the world, making it easier to do it.
But people are acting like it's some kind of a new evil that's emerged, aren't they?
Well, and you got the same kind of reaction when industrialization came along 200 years ago. Some people reacted very badly to it. But rather than fight the thing, figure out how you stay on the edge, do value added.
Right.
And that's why in this country we've got to start making some reforms to make it easier for people to do business so we don't tie our hands.
Absolutely. You know, I call NAFTA, the one that happened in the 90s, the third NAFTA. The first NAFTA was when the textile jobs came from England to New England. The second one was when they went from New England to the South in the early part of the 20th century. And the third one was when those textile jobs went to Mexico. And there's already a fourth NAFTA. Those jobs have now left Mexico and they've gone to China.
That's right. And but in terms of the whole economy, you know, we have very fewer farmers than we did 10 or 100 years ago.
Right.
The key is staying on the cutting edge. You know, it goes back to clipper ships. Everyone could make a sail ship, but we did it better than the others.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, though, that we are in a very, I don't know whether volatile time is the right word to use, but we're in a very interesting time, at least, with regard to the way this whole thing is shaking out. The globalization that we're having now is happening much faster than the globalization we had, say, 100 years ago, and that's kind of what's taking people's breath away, isn't it?
Well, when you get the rapid change, it does take people's breath away, and we sometimes find it hard to adjust. We sort of have one foot in the old camp and one foot in the new,
mm-hmm.
and it can get it kind of bewildering.
Yeah.
But it's nothing new. You take a person in 1800 and put them in 1900,
right,
they wouldn't recognize the world.
Exactly. You know, Steve, Frédéric Bastiat, the French economist, and I think he's kind of a comedian as well, said, when goods cross borders, armies don't. Isn't the greatest benefit of globalization a peace dividend that could change the course of human events for centuries?
Well, then this gets to our situation in Iraq and some
mm-hmm.
other parts of the world. You know, after World War II, we did make it possible for a free enterprise. People are being able to devote their energies to constructive ends in Europe and in Japan, and it
right.
worked. And we're now doing this very same difficult thing in the Middle East. When you allow people to rise up and start businesses and realize that there's more to the world than blowing up your neighbor, it starts to change attitudes. It doesn't happen overnight, as we learned in the last century.
Right.
But when you get that foundation in there, it's good for everybody.
Freedom is an amazing force. It sure is. Steve Forbes, thank you for your contribution today. It's been a great visit. We hope you'll come back again real soon.
Look forward to it, Jim, and keep up your good work.
Thank you, sir. Steve Forbes, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.